Welcome to CrimeWire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or family member and would like to send CrimeWire information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Tonight's topic is the Dylan Redwine case. I'm Kim Colton, Director of Research for CrimeWire, and I'll be manning the switchboard and monitoring the chat room. And now let me introduce the host of tonight's show, statement analyst and CrimeWire consultant, Peter Hyatt. Hi, Peter.
How are you, Kim?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. A couple updates before we get to tonight's show.
Okay, excellent.
A couple cases we've been covering on the blog, the Jodi Arias case, we have not given a lot of attention to.
Right.
Because there is little mystery in terms of her language. She's obviously deceptive, and it's not something that I think is of much interest in terms of statement analysis. We recently reviewed the case of the young woman in England who had acid thrown in her face and suffered partial blindness and some very serious skin damage, and her face is forever changed. When she had spoken out, statement analysis had shown that she was concealing the identity of the attacker, which means it was either self-induced or she knew the attacker, but her language showed that she was being deceptive. We then got a report that the police had made two arrests, and therefore it wasn't a case of deception. However, it's turned out that she had researched a previous acid attack on her home computer just a week or two before the attack, and now with the arrest we have learned that she knows the attackers. So her language gave her away, and she's obviously someone that's in deep trouble and deceptive. But in terms of the using statement analysis and staying within the same principles, it was clear that she was being deceptive. So just on some of the cases, we looked at the same case of something similar with young Miss Jean Delaware, who was involved in pornography, and her denial proved that she was deceptive, and now that's come out. So it's a kind of a thing, Kim, where it's case after case after case.
Mm-hmm.
We listen to the language, we follow the principles, and we stay within the what's called the scientific approach, meaning that if we apply the same principles repeatedly, we're expecting similar responses, similar outcomes. Well, in the case tonight that we're highlighting of Dylan Redwine, we have found that the same thing has to come out, that Mark Redwine is not being honest or forthcoming about what happened to Dylan. And so I've asked not only Elaine to come on, because I think Elaine did a tremendous job highlighting her son's case on the Dr. Phil show, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I've also asked, as many of our listeners are familiar with now, statement analyst and private investigator from Canada, Karen Goff, to join us. And Karen, thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Karen does tremendous work, just a talented and gifted analyst. And Karen, I know that for whatever reason, Dylan has touched your heart as he's touched mine and so many others, and it seems that this case has just overwhelmed you in capturing your heart. Can you talk about that for a minute?
First of all, I am a mother of two boys, so of course that, you know, it strikes my heart immediately. Also, too, from a statement analyst perspective, there is so much inside of the statements, of the language, that I feel like I can contribute to helping bring Dylan home. And I live, eat, and breathe this case. I think about it every single day, even when I'm not actually actively reading the statements and rereading the statements, but I do go over his statements repeatedly, especially the ones, the early ones from November, I believe it was November 29th, with, from KOAT Channel 7, and the one that was at the end of January from KUSA. Those two statements really have a lot of information inside of them.
Well, one of the principles we're going to follow, and this probably will be somewhat new to Elaine, is that when someone is being deceptive, when someone is lying, and Elaine, I'll ask Karen to elaborate on this later, is that their words don't come from a vacuum. The words must come from someplace. And so even the deceptive person, when they're attempting to deceive, will still yield information for us that I believe, and I echo what Karen said, that can help bring Dylan home. In the case of Kaylee Anthony, her mother, Casey Anthony, everyone's familiar with, on HLN, I remember one of the commentators was saying, I can tell when Casey Anthony's lying, her lips are moving, and everyone chuckled and thought it was very funny, where it makes investigators like us, our skin crawl, because from their words, we should be listening. Casey herself said, well, in my heart, I believe she's close, which is a real indicator that she was close. And then later on, her mother, Cindy, threw out the searchers and said, we don't believe that Kaylee's in the woods or anything. Well, she introduced the topic in the woods, and Casey introduced the topic of being close, and surprise, surprise, she was found less than a half mile down the block in the woods where she was recovered. And so this is the reason why just saying that Mark is deceptive is not enough. We want to accomplish several things. One of the things we want to accomplish is to bring out Dylan's name to the public persona, continuing to bring it out, I should say, and continue to put pressure on police, prosecutors, and in the eyes of the public to help bring Dylan home and help get justice for him. But also, I think the greater value of the analysis, once deception has been discerned, is to find if there's anything within his words that would help us. And Karen, I remember presenting the case of missing baby Ayla here in Waterville, Maine, mm-hmm. to Avanom Sapir, the founder of the Laboratory for Scientific Interrogation, and he was looking at the statement, and the statement said, contrary to rumors floating out there, and he asked me, what does the father do for a living? And I said he was training to be a truck driver. And he said, uh-oh, truck drivers have their wheels on the ground. Police need to be searching in water. And sure enough, police were searching the Kennebec River and did pull some items out, which they had not revealed to us, from the Kennebec River in Maine. So this highlights how important it is to listen carefully to the words that the Mark uses, even when he's trying to be deceptive. So when Dylan went missing in November, recently, for those that are just joining us, his mother, Elaine Redwine, courageously took to the air and spoke on television on the Dr. Phil show, in which she literally, her and her son, faced off against Mark Redwine, who, Elaine, I think he did everything he could to try to triangulate and pull Dr. Phil into a he said, she said, and it appeared for the most part that Dr. Phil was having none of it. So first of all, welcome to the show, Elaine, and thank you for being on it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you,
and
Elaine, for coming on.
I think it was a very courageous thing that you did in going on the show. Were you concerned that Mark would attempt to control the information?
Well, I'm always concerned because, you know, Mark has a tendency to deflect and turn a question into a question, but I also, you know enough about Dr. Phil and hoped that that would not happen.
How about the polygrapher? He seemed to be able to discern Mark's method of deception. Was that fair to say?
Yes, very fair to say.
He was very frustrated because, and he said it plainly, he said, when I asked Mark a question, he would attempt to answer a question unrelated. And Elaine, I think that for the audience watching, that was maddening. That was really frustrating to hear that. And I wondered if that is something that you had been not only so well used to, but was concerned that people would not recognize what he was trying to do there.
Well, I don't think people recognize it. I certainly do after being married to him for 18 years, but it's protocol for Mark. It's what he always does.
With a control abuser, which is what I see in his language, and then I'm not a body language expert, but I think it was pretty obvious in his body language, is that he has a need to control. And my concern going into the program was that he was going to attempt to turn this into a, hey guys, why don't you work together as a couple to help find Dylan instead of actually gaining information? And that's the part where I felt that Dr. Phil did not fall into that trap, where it was, it reminds me of the troublesome kid in school who tries to get all his friends in trouble around him, and he actually takes the attention off himself and he spreads it around by using the pronoun we. We're all doing it, that sort of thing. And I was concerned that Mark would attempt to control information by turning this into a Dr. Phil counseling appointment on how to better communicate between parents. And that was not the issue at all. The issue was, and this is the part I thought was the most courageous, is where you kept saying to him, where is Dylan? Where is Dylan? And his lack of responses, I think that was something that spoke to the audience. So at least from the people that I have heard from and the commentators that I've read online, Elaine, people seem like they really understood that he was concealing information and attempting to change this from where is Dylan to woe is me, poor me, why isn't my son respecting me, that sort of tangents. Was there a lot of information that was missing from what was aired on the program?
Yes. I think there was a lot of valuable and pertinent information that is in the uncut version that was not aired, especially when he went back with Dr. Phil and Jack Tremarco.
Is there any of that you could share with us?
It was just, Jack really, Mark trusted Jack, and you could see that. And, Mark's body language and the way, his lack of saying anything said mounds of information. I mean, it was very disturbing when I sat on the stage and was watching him not speak, because I could tell from his face and just how he was reacting that, he was certainly and is certainly hiding something. And what most people don't realize is that Corey nor I, or especially I, have not had the opportunity to talk with Mark. He will not speak with me at all. And I think part of that is because he knows now that he cannot control me. And so when I was on the Dr. Phil show, it was my first opportunity to actually speak with Mark. So it may have come across angry, which I am, but the other part of it is that I really haven't had an opportunity to speak with him because he won't speak with me. And I think a lot of that is because he knows I'm not afraid of him anymore. He's not controlling me anymore. The tables have turned.
But you used to be afraid of him, right? Is that what you're saying? You used to be afraid of him?
Yes. I mean, there's always been a fear, which is why it took me so long, I think, to, actually initiate a divorce and then follow through with it. Because Mark is, he's a very manipulative, vengeful person. And he does not believe, and I've always said this, he looks at people as possessions. He doesn't look at them as people. We're not allowed to have our own opinions, me or the kids. So that puts fear in me.
I wanted to ask you when you mentioned Corey. How old is Corey?
Corey is 21 now.
He's young. Elaine, his bravery in doing what he did was really inspiring.
Yeah.
That had to be difficult for him.
This is crushed him. He wants his brother home. This has crushed him. It's not easy for him to get up and accuse his father because, that is his father. And he's devastated that his father would do something like this to him and to Dylan.
I thought he was amazingly brave, and his voice did not shake the way I was expecting, and his body language was strong, and it seemed to me that he had his goal for his brother, and that's what got him through it. Is that fair to say? And was it the same with your thinking?
I'm sorry?
I'm wondering about your thinking in the same vein, where I can imagine after the years of being with him and everything you've been through that you might have felt here's a chance to go after different topics, but you stayed on Dylan from start to finish. And I think that Mark attempted to control the flow of information by going off Dylan and getting away from Dylan, whether it was about himself or about Corey, excuse me, or even about you. And that's where I think the show shined its best, because it was about Dylan to the point where Dr. Phil had to say to him, you know, this is not about you. And I think he was exposed as not only a narcissist, but I sure hope that police were not only listening, but in the very least they had an analyst of their own going through his words. Have you had any feedback from them since the show?
From law enforcement?
Yes.
They're still trying to get the uncut version, but they've not really, you know, they really don't say much, and the things they do say, you know, I have to, you know, kind of keep it under my breath. So
mm-hmm.
Sure, and that's fine, and that should be honored. And at any time any of us ask a question that goes that area, if it's out of bounds, just quickly say so, and we'll move on.
Oh, okay.
The integrity of the investigation has to go forward, but have you gained any confidence from them that it's progressing?
You know, I've lost so much faith in people and in law enforcement and in the law since all of this. I was always, you know, one of those people that, you know, abided by the law and tried to instill that in my children. And so this, for me, has been increasingly frustrating, because, you know, there's just no information. I think that Mark is trying to convince people that Dylan just vanished, and I think in some respects it's working, and it's very frustrating to me.
Who do you think it's working on?
Well, I think that, you know, just because of the lack of clues and the lack of information and the lack of evidence, the lack of participation on Mark's side, you know, I think law enforcement is having a difficult time, you know, creating any type of case.
Sure. The behavioral analysis, and I'm not sure if they've spoken to you about that at all, that began with the initial report made. Did he make the 911 call, the initial call?
Well, there's been debates about that. I called the police after he texted me, and then apparently he called the police right after I called them.
Okay. So actually, there really isn't controversy. That's what happened. The behavioral analysis begins with that call generally, but the fact that you had to call first and that he did not even speak to you on the phone tells us a great deal in terms of how it begins. People will say, and this is generally what guilty people say, is that there's no book on how to handle these things. There's no need for a book. There's a book in terms of statistics of how people react. People react the way you reacted. They immediately do whatever it takes to get their missing child back. Whatever it takes. It makes no difference. They cry out. They call out for their child. It's no different than a child wandering from a parent's hand at Walmart. I'm a dad of 6 children, and 4 of them are grown now, and 2 of them are still young. But when the older ones were little and someone wandered away, I would naturally call out their name. So the first thing that police will take note of is that when a child goes missing and the parent doesn't call out the name and the parent doesn't want to run before the cameras and negotiate with the kidnapper or speak to their missing son, that sort of thing, it's well duly noted. It's very similar to a parent losing a child at Walmart, not calling out for the child, getting in the car, going home, taking a nap, and then maybe later on considering making a police report. It's that ludicrous. So I think from the very beginning, Mark put himself under suspicion. And then his refusal to speak out became evident, self-evident, when he did finally speak out. And I imagine at this point that he probably would wish he hadn't. Since the Dr. Phil show, has he had any contact with either you or Corey?
No, and I've emailed him and I've texted him. I don't know if he's getting my text because he says he's blocked me, and then I've tried to call him and I have not had the opportunity to speak with him. And even on Dr. Phil, I begged him, you know, to speak with me, and he keeps insisting that we have a mediator, but yet he doesn't follow through and actually, you know, does anything to make that happen.
Yeah. One of the things that he used frequently when he was standing alone was the word we. And I think that every parent of every teenager knows that when there's guilt involved, the teenager likes to use the word we and us and we all did it, that sort of thing, because there's a feeling that we want to spread out our guilt. And he repeatedly talked about the division between you and him, and he was divisive, but then he would use the pronoun we or say us, that sort of thing. In fact, he even said, we're going to take the polygraph.
Right. And I found that interesting as well.
My response was, no, he's not going to take the polygraph, not when he's using the pronoun we, that's for sure. What about, Elaine, this is the difficult part, but this is where we begin to really cry out for justice and try to bring things to a forefront. What about the words that he's now using, the things that he's now saying? Was there anything that were there any aha moments for you other than, I know that he's lying and I know that he's violent and controlling? Was there anything that he said that made you jump and say, police need to search here, search there?
Not necessarily to search here or search there, but one of the things that I found interesting is when he said, Elaine, I didn't lose Dylan. You know, because I kept insisting that, you know, he lost Dylan because,
yeah.
You know, and he said, I didn't lose Dylan. And I said, what happened to him then?
Yeah.
You know, he's not here. And then he keeps reverting back to me taking Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Dr. Phil ridiculed that, which he did such a good job ridiculing that notion that you would put him on a plane and follow alongside, and then he went to the criminal element, and Dr. Phil called on that, and he had no answer. But as he spoke, there were several things that really stood out to me, and then I'm going to ask Karen to weigh in on the second part of this. The first part was that when he spoke, he seemed to do what guilty people do, besides the fact that he was giving signals of deception, is he seemed to attempt to disparage Dylan and was almost like a narcissist being insulted that Dylan wanted to be with his friends. And that became an issue. So whenever someone repeats something, we know it's going to be an important issue, a sensitive issue. And he kept repeating about Dylan wanting to be with his friends. And it seemed that Mark was insulted. Would that match his personality?
Absolutely.
Okay. Wanting to be with his friends. Karen,
mm-hmm.
After moving beyond the indicators of guilt, moving beyond the indicators of deception, were the things that you found in your analysis that lit you up and said, you know, police need to search this area, that area, that sort of thing?
An area in particular, well, I did do an analysis recently, and it is, I will apologize, Elaine, I don't know if you've read it, but it is, it's pretty... I went through the words in one paragraph, one part of the statement that he had made. I guess it was in his, it was the January statement that he had made, where he had talked about the question to him was, do you blame yourself too a little bit? And he went into this long thing about how I normally wouldn't, but I do blame myself. There were words inside of that that whole paragraph that painted a picture for me. When I see words or hear words, I see pictures, and I run it like a movie in my head. That's how it runs in my head. And there was one part where the word struggle comes up. The word struggle comes up several times in both of his statements, And the struggle seems to be connected with what happened to Dylan. And I strongly suspect that a struggle had happened with and Dylan. And then he went on further to say, I have to dig down deeper and deeper and deeper every day. And that's, again, language leaks out. His brain knows the truth, and the brain wants to tell the truth. The brain wants to tell what it knows. And so words tend to leak out in a person's language. And I thought that was very telling. And while it doesn't give any proximity in terms of geographic location, it did indicate to me that we could be looking at a situation where Mark had dug down deep into the earth. And I know that's very, very upsetting to hear. But it is. This is what I do, is I bring out these words, and hopefully it will give law enforcement something to look at and consider. I'm sure they have considered this.
I'd like to ask, Karen, if I could, to touch in what you're doing there. Elaine, she's speaking about a statement he made where he was directly asked, do you blame yourself to a little bit? And he said, I normally wouldn't, but I do. I do blame myself. I relive this 1,000 times a day. Every time I comes back to it, I see him lying on the couch. And one of the things that we take note of is that when people use references to body posture, we generally see a kind of an increase in tension at that point. It's like if you said, my boss told me to be at work at 9 o'clock, okay? And you said, my boss stood and told me to be at work at 9 o'clock. The fact that his body posture comes into your mind, your brain is telling us that there's like an increase in authority or tension or something there. Well, with Mark, he saw him in his mind, he said, lying on the couch, and I didn't try hard enough, maybe, to wake him up, which may have been resuscitation. And this is what Karen was saying. I beat myself up over that constantly, but that's not helping me. Interesting, not helping Dylan, not helping me. This is the narcissist. Right. And it's not helping Dylan. I mean, it's hard enough for any parent to have to deal with something like this and to sit here, body posture, and beat yourself up again over and over about what you could have done. I struggle every day, dig down deeper and deeper. So these are the words that Karen is looking at, and I think they're giving us an insight into him.
Right.
Please give us
a lot of leakage in his words. I mean, when he speaks, I see volumes of things in his language.
Elaine, I'd like you to at any time confirm or deny any of the analysis of his words. In terms of his personality, because you would obviously know him best with the things that you've experienced. We looked at his description, and what it sounded like was there was a dispute that took place having to do with him wanting to not be with his father, him wanting to be with his friends or be home with his mom. What I'm concerned happened, and this is just from Mark's own language, and I had written this before the Dr. Phil show, is that Dylan loved you, and that if Mark said to him, well, you don't want to be with me, that's just your mother's influence, and Dylan were to hear that, that Dylan would have reacted to stand up for his mom.
Yes.
Then on the Dr. Phil show, we saw, sure enough, Corey being accused of the very same thing, that a 13-year-old boy is missing, and here we have the father on national television worried about being disrespected himself. But that wasn't good enough for him. He had to blame not so much Corey and not thinking for himself, but to blame you, Elaine, saying that's your mother's influence, that's your mother's thinking for you. this is what I was concerned, that this type of personality, one that demands respect and demands control, feels that he lost control and he should be having the adoration of his 13-year-old son, yet his son wants to be anywhere but with him, with his friends, home with his mother. How accurate do you think that is?
I think that's 100% accurate.
Okay. Have you been able to share this type of the personality of Mark with police?
Yes.
Okay, because it's a very patterned type of abuser. Would it be fair to say that most of Mark's later time with you, that he did not need to get physical because the threat of physical violence would be enough to control the family?
Yes.
Okay.
These are also things that are...
Yeah. And I have one more question, because I look for things in what he said as clues. Because, of course, the biggest thing that we want to know is what did, in fact, happen from the time they left the Walmart onwards. And I have a question for you, Elaine. In terms of how would you characterize Mark's feelings towards Dylan regarding sports? You had mentioned in one of your interviews that I know Dylan loved baseball and he liked throwing the football around, but he was not, it sounded like he wasn't really big on playing football. Did Mark have a problem with that? You know?
I don't know that he had a problem with it. I just, you know, Mark never participated in any of Dylan's, you know, activities. And so he didn't know. He really didn't know. It's like when he says Dylan was watching Nickelodeon. He had no idea what Dylan was into. He has no idea what Dylan liked and disliked. And that's very clear, you know, in all of the comments that he makes. Dylan liked to throw the football around, but Dylan didn't like to get hit on the football field.
Right.
And that's why Dylan preferred baseball. And Mark had no clue. Because Mark hasn't been around him for the past, you know, 5 years on a one-on-one basis.
Right. So Mark wasn't really insistent then that he be part of sports.
Well, no, because Mark was never around. He didn't even know what sports Dylan participated in.
Okay. Well, the reason why I bring it up is because he does bring up the conversation about the fact that Dylan was not allowed to participate in the football program. Because of apparently getting registered late and because he didn't have a physical done. Is that an accurate description of what happened?
Well, Mark views it as anger, but Dylan really was okay with not playing football, especially at a new school, you know, and he had just met new friends. So he, you know, Dylan could speak with me. If Dylan would have been upset about not playing football, I guarantee you that I would have figured out a way to get Dylan in football, because that's what I've always done.
Yeah.
And Dylan wasn't near as upset about not playing football as Mark appeared to be about, you know, and I think a lot of it is just blame shifting, you know, trying to show everybody or tell everybody that I was a bad mom because I didn't get Dylan into football and Dylan really wanted to play. And that was not the case at all.
Yeah.
That was his diversion tactic.
Yeah.
And that was common, I think, in his form of deception. He is someone that tries to change topics. On the topic of sports, you said that Dylan would have shared that with you, and you would have found a way. And you can almost hear parents going, "Oh yeah, of course. We all push through those things, and schools generally cooperate with that." Can you describe your closeness with Dylan in terms of being able to talk and that sort of thing?
Dylan, you know, just as much as Corey and I, we've always had an open relationship. I may not like what they have to say, and they may not like what I have to say, but we were together for so long, just us, that we always spoke the truth and spoke how we felt. That's how I raised him. So he was never afraid of telling me how he felt.
Was he protective of you?
Very. Very protective of me and very protective of Corey. He did not like it, and his dad consistently berated us, and he always told Dylan, you know, your mom is alienating you from me. And he always used that word alienating. And, you know, you're the only reason you're reacting this way is because of the environment you're in.
In fact, that was his quote. He said, to Corey, I believe that you're being very disrespectful, and I believe everything that's coming out of your mouth is perpetuated by your mother. So ultimately, he was blaming you. Elaine, if you were to jump from one to another, how much of you would think that this was Mark losing his temper, and or how much of it would you think that this was Mark trying to hurt you forever?
You know, that's a tough. That's
they
tough
might
for
be
me.
Better off separated. For the phone call.
I never had any ill will towards Mark. My ill will towards Mark now is because Dylan is gone, and I think that he was so mad that I actually followed through with the divorce. And when we went through that separation and we had joint custody, he never saw the kids. But I still paid him child support because I didn't, you know, it was a low enough amount that I could manage. And I just didn't want to stir the pot again because I didn't want to go through that process with him again. And I think that once it finally came to the court when they said that I could move Dylan, he was so angry because I was actually going outside of what he wanted.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a big part of why Dylan is missing.
That part where Mark lost control and wasn't able to control you any longer. Listeners are very familiar with Susan Murphy Milano and her work in domestic violence, and not only statistics, but just I think common sense tells us that moment where the abuser loses control is where the most danger exists. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I firmly believe that if we wouldn't have moved from Durango, Dylan wouldn't be missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Morgan Harrington's parents, she went missing going back a few years ago from the Metallica concert. You may have seen her story in the news. They survived Morgan's brutal death by their faith and by sticking together, but they did talk about those horrific what-ifs. And they're both highly educated people. And
when Dave was coming home.
And they were able to work through those what-ifs because it could really drive you out of your mind. You know, if we had yielded to Mark, if we had done this and that. But ultimately, Mark is the one that's responsible. And ultimately, if he can be, Elaine, even provoked through tonight's program to speak out and defend himself in his mind, what we have is gifted people like Karen listening who will be listening very carefully and looking for the words of where we might be able to find Dylan coming from Mark, because Mark doesn't know. I'm not sure if you were too familiar with any of this analysis, but one of the things we talk about is a reliable denial, where if you were, for instance, accused of taking money, you would say, I didn't take your money. And it would be very plain, it would be simple, it would not be difficult for you to say. You may be very upset being accused, but you're going to say the words, I didn't take your money. And we note that that has the pronoun I, something that we use as humans millions of times, very easy for us, we're very good at it. Didn't is past tense. And take the money is exactly what the accusation was. In all that Mark has spoken out, he has not once said that he didn't harm Dylan or he didn't cause Dylan's disappearance. He says things like, he would never, how can you question me? He says things that deceptive people say, but void of actually giving what we call a reliable denial, the simple grasp of innocence. If he's unable to say that, then we can't say it for him. And that's why I felt there was no way he was going to go through with that polygraph. He was going to rely on his own wits and take it as far as he can, and he actually found a small little clever way to blame the polygrapher. Did you notice that he actually blamed the polygrapher for asking him
Oh,
are
I
you
did.
Feeling up to this?
Oh, I did.
You saw that, Kim?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. And I think that he purposely, he looked like he drank some the night before, and I think he purposely did. He knew that question was going to come up.
Yes, but did you notice that 2 hours later,
that's true.
Really good.
Yeah,
he looked
all
put together, and he was just fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was definitely Jack's question of, so, you're dealing with a hangover here, because theoretically, for that amount of drinking, he would have felt kind of awful still, but he was looking pretty good. Actually, I do want to point out one thing. I also do behavioral analysis, and one thing that I wanted to point out is when Jack asked him, do you know where Dylan is? I don't know how many people saw it, but his head actually nodded in an affirmative. And we look for that. When someone's denying something, they're saying, no, I didn't, or whatever. But at the same time, their head is moving in the opposite direction of what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
Because his head did, in times, move correctly according to what he it matched what he was saying of in the yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know where Dylan is? His head nodded up and down very slightly as he was denying knowing it. Which I think is something hoping they're looking at.
One thing I want to add that someone in the chat room has said is that there is such a thing as a functioning alcoholic. And he could have been, very looking like something the cat dragged in the night before that morning. And then later when you see him in a suit and stuff, he looks pretty good. So I don't know. I think maybe he was. And Peter, I just want to interject. Do you want to take some phone calls? And when do you do? We have two lined up. And I do have a question from someone in the chat room. So
I'd like to let you know. Elaine, if you're comfortable with that, because Kim, you have to be pretty fast on the cutoff button if Elaine is not comfortable. So, how do you feel about
definitely.
That, Elaine?
I'm going to be very quick with the cutoff button.
Elaine, are you okay with that?
That's fine.
Okay.
I've screened them, so we're good.
You just ask them if they can be brief with their question, though.
Okay. The first one. This is Manny, and Manny. Welcome to
yes.
the show.
Thank you.
You have like 2 minutes.
Yes, I'll make it shorter than that because Elaine, we all know what you are going through, and the prayers of a nation are with you. And my only goal for speaking on the show today is hoping that between Mr. Hyatt and Dr. Phil, that a lot more pressure is placed on law enforcement now. This can be solved. And you did a great job on TV. I was just going to point out everything that was pointed out very briefly, that his language was soft, passive voice. Yours was strong when you accused him of what he did. He then rambled on, and then later, of course, he said, yes, he is my whole life. Well, neither his body nor his linguistics pointed to this. I think we all saw that tie move when he had to do the polygraph, which lasted 20 minutes, and the same as head bob. Yes, his head was saying yes when his mouth was saying no. So God bless you. I hope the word goes coast to coast, and you are a very brave, wonderful lady, and thank you for having me on this show, Mr. Hyatt. God bless.
Great, thanks for coming on.
Same, Manny. Thank you so much.
Elaine, I think that he echoes how so many of us feel, that it just took so much courage for you to be on that stage and be face-to-face with an abuser who at this point, you've obviously known from the beginning and some of the quotes from the beginning of his involvement. By now, you knew that he was lying through his teeth. So it's really quite a great inspiration. And I think that we do need to put pressure on. I have to ask you this about that, though. Was there any talk after the Dr. Phil show of any attorneys jumping in to help you, A. B, any attorneys jumping in to help him?
Dr. Phil did say that he would provide some attorneys to assist Mark if Mark, you know, because he kept saying there was a shelf life, and that if Mark would lead us to where Dylan was, that Dr. Phil would take him in his private plane and have, you know, his attorneys assist him with the legal part of it. So, yes, there was.
Okay, and in the same vein, you, out of all of us, know Mark the best. If Mark was arrested, even on a lesser charge, like lying to law enforcement or child endangerment charges, would he fold under questioning or would he stand tough? This is considering if he was arrested.
I think
A lot of bullies are cowards.
He is definitely a coward. Obviously, he's a coward. But, you know, I don't know. I think he's in too deep right now.
There's a very sobering effect upon a man when he's looking at going to prison as someone who has harmed a child. That's not something that you're not going to be selling a president with that type of thing hanging over your head. So I was wondering.
But he really feels like he can get away with this. He really feels that that he's not the suspect. He really believes that that no one is focusing on him, and that it's just me and Corey pointing the finger at him because I'm a bitter ex-wife and I have turned his kids against him, and that's his thought process.
If he believes that, he's the only one in the nation that does, him and the mail deliverer. Because the public's reaction has been, I think, universally what was echoed by Mandy when he called in, is that he was not able to turn this into a forum on marriage or getting along or anything else. And if anyone had doubts before about his involvement, he did a good job removing all doubt. Dr. Phil may have to technically say he's not a suspect and nothing happened. Well, we don't have to say that because it was plain. One of the things, it's a little bit of a tough question for you, this one, is were you looking in his face when some of the sensitive questions were being asked, especially when Dr. Phil pressed on him? Were you able to maintain eye contact?
The first day he and I were on stage, but the second day, no, he did not appear on stage. So the first day I looked at him, I did not take my eyes off of him because, you know, the fear, I've always been fearful that he would harm my children, and that was the only thing he could ever do to me that would hurt me this bad. And so when he finally did that, I have no fear of him anymore. And so the first day I looked in his eyes. I did not take my eyes off of him, and that intimidated him because he would not look me in the eyes the whole time. He had a very difficult time looking at me.
You know, the only time he looked comfortable was when you got upset and you were hurting. That's the only time that I saw his body posture where he actually seemed to really enjoy himself.
Well, and did you notice he kept calling me Miss Redwine? He wouldn't direct me by my name. He kept calling me Miss Redwine, like he owned me because I have his name.
Right.
Yeah. Did you keep his name for the sake of the kids?
I did. I'm in the process of changing it now, but yes, I did.
Yeah, that's kind of a common thing. And it's an act of love towards the children because it helps them with continuity, and I'm sure you've thought that through. Is there anyone advocating for you while you advocate for Dylan? Is there anyone stepping forward?
You mean as far as an attorney or law enforcement?
Starting with that, yes.
It's definitely something I'm considering at this point. I've got to do something more.
Yeah, I encourage you, and I will keep on with the articles, and I'll every time that Mark speaks out, I will ask Karen to join me and we'll do more analysis. But I think the more noise that we can make and the cry for justice for Dylan goes out, the more likely we'll get results. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I feel the same way, Peter. We have to keep a loud noise going on here about this, because that's going to help immensely. That's what I think.
Yeah.
It may make law enforcement uncomfortable, but nothing can measure the pain that you've been through, and we really need to hold the feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Well, I'm worried of everybody else being comfortable about Dylan being missing, because I certainly am not.
No.
And that's why we have to maintain the noise. And Elaine, I'm actually hoping that Mark is getting angry enough to speak out. And that's usually a way actually, Karen, you pointed it out at the beginning of the program, that Dr. Phil went after him to remind him that he had done criminal work.
Yes.
And that he was not simply boasting of his own credentials. He was actually setting Mark up. Could you explain that?
Dr. Phil started out when he was explaining things to Mark that he was a forensic psychologist. He was, and that was a very smart move, because he was letting Mark know that, he's not going to get anything by him. And I know that setting the stage to make the person a little more on guard, nervous, can actually be helpful in having things spill out. So I think Dr. Phil did that was very conscious about what he was doing, because he was letting Mark know that a forensic psychologist, he deals with criminals, he has dealt in the criminal justice system. So you're not going to get anything by me. That was a good move.
For sure. And we have one more caller. We have 7 minutes left, but Rain is the caller. And she actually has a foothold on what you were just saying, Karen. So,
okay.
Rain, welcome to the show. And please ask your question and give us your comments.
Thank you very much for having me on, and I would like to say to Elaine, I'm so sorry that you're having to go through this. I am a mother of 4 children, and I have never been through anything like this, and my thoughts and prayers are with you and your family through this entire time, and hopefully Dylan can bring home safe very soon.
Thank you.
One of the things, this is not a question first, but one of the things that I've noticed, I watched the Dr. Phil show, I recorded it, of course, and I watched it about 5 times. The last part of the show that I was watching, when Mark was in the back room with Dr. Phil was all relaxed with his tie undone, and he was grilling Mark about, do you know where Dylan is, and things like that. Mark kind of dropped his head, and he mumbled, off camera. I don't know if anybody had caught that, but I listened to it 5 times, and that's what he said, that he would let Dr. Phil know off camera. But my questions are, was Mark ever abusive with the children when they were small? If it's okay for you to answer, I understand if you don't want to. I understand. When they were small and when you guys were married. And my other question is, has law enforcement tried to bring him back in for a polygraph? And who is, and this PI, what is the private investigator doing? You know, we heard about one, but we haven't heard anything else.
Well, as far as whether Mark was abusive with the children, I think abuse spans a lot more than just physical abuse. Mark was very stern, and Mark wanted things his way. And so, Corey and Dylan were, they were kept in check, if you will, by Mark. I was the one who they cuddled with and loved because they trusted me. And I think that, there was always a level of distrust that they had with Mark, because we didn't ever know how he would react.
It was kind of one of those instances, if they come home with a bad grade, they were like, oh, we can't tell Dad, but we can tell Mom, kind of deal, because we don't know if Dad's going to blow. Okay. I know exactly where you're coming from on that one, because I've lived with someone like that.
And I was the same way in our marriage. I mean, I always brought good news home to Mark, but I never brought home bad news. I just kept it myself because it was not something that, you know, I trusted him in dealing with in a positive way. You know, negative is negative, but when you're a family, you deal with the negative and positive, and Mark just, he didn't know how to deal with that, especially when somebody else made mistakes. But when he made mistakes, it was par. It was fine. He blamed somebody else for the mistakes that he made, and he still continues to do that. As far as law enforcement goes, I kind of forgot what your question was on that.
Oh, a private investigator. There's supposed to be a private
investigator. Came to Mark and I both, and I did not feel that he was somebody that I wanted on my team to help find Dylan after checking credentials and things like that. There's a lot on my end that is happening behind the scenes that I don't let people know. It's not their business to know, and I certainly don't want, you know, Mark to know.
I can understand. I mean, private life is private life. The main thing is to put focus on Dylan and find Dylan. And whoever is responsible needs to be brought to justice.
Right, and we've done some things, within our circle that we'll keep under our vest as far as getting people involved to help find Dylan, but the investigator that is helping Mark, because Mark did, I guess, bring him on, to my knowledge, hasn't been very beneficial.
Right. Had you caught or had you even watched the Dr. Phil show? Have you even noticed what I had told you? Had Dr. Phil even caught that?
Well, I'm going to go home and watch it again.
Okay. I don't mind leaving my number or anything with, or my email with the other people if you ever need to get in touch with me, because I have followed this case since Dylan has went missing.
Thank you.
I have followed this continuously.
Thank you, Cole. We have to move on because we're about done here.
Okay. Rain. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Good night, Rain. I'll be in
touch.
Good
night. Okay, good thank
night.
You.
Elaine, we're going to come to the end of the program, but we're going to continue to highlight the call for justice, and I'll be in touch off-air with you. If there's anything we can do at any time, CrimeWire will be glad to step up and do that. But especially we're going to keep the public aware of the call for justice for Dylan. And go ahead.
And I appreciate it. I mean, I love the fact that we are getting Dylan's name out there. And I want justice for Dylan, but I also want hope for Dylan.
I understand. I hurt for you, but I can't say I can ever enter into how much you hurt. The more we're able to get Mark to speak out one way or another, the more information we can gather. So we'll keep Dylan's name up. We'll keep asking for help. We'll keep pressure on law enforcement in any way we can.
Okay, that'd be great.
But any way we can help, we certainly will.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Peter. Thank you, Karen. And thank you, you know, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you for keeping Dylan's name out there.
We admire your courage in all this.
Yeah.
And you're in our prayers and continue to push and fight.
If I don't fight for Dylan, I'm afraid no one will.
Well, you have a lot of people actually out here. I'm in Canada, so I know people in Canada are listening to this, and people in the States, all over North America. You have got a lot of people behind you on this.
Yes. Yes,
you do. You're not alone in this by any means.
Not alone. I feel very alone without Dylan.
Yeah.
But thank you all so much. I really appreciate it.
Keep pressing
on. Thank you. And let me just wrap it up by saying thanks to our public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases that wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice, and discuss crime-related topics with the experts. Thank you very much, Karen. And
Thank you, and love to you, Elaine. And Peter, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Until next time, God bless and stay safe.
Yeah, the fire is